This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. In his State of the University address in October, Western Michigan University President John Dunn said that many changes would be coming to the university over the next year. We will look ahead to some of those changes and review some recent activity on the Western campus with Western Michigan University President John Dunn. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Gordon. It's nice to be with you. And Yvonne, it's nice to see you as well. Thank you.
And Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Yvonne Zipp is here as well. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Gordon.
And Yvonne, first question.
As Gordon said, 2013 brought many sweeping changes to Western, and I was wondering if perhaps you could talk a little bit about what you're seeing in 2014.
Well, of course, we're always full of optimism and good cheer, and Happy New Year's, by the way, to you and all our listeners. I think 2014 will prove to be a very good year. We will open the medical school in the fall of 2014. That's going very, very well from the standpoint of renovation of the facility that was donated downtown by MPI. That's looking very good. We're very pleased with the progress that's being made there. And also the number of applicants that have expressed interest in the medical school. I don't know what the latest count is, but we were well over 3,500 interested applicants for 50 slots. So I'm quite confident that we'll have a very strong class, a good class. And it's an exciting time, and we're pleased about that.
Andy Fitzpatrick, a reporter of the Battle Creek Inquirer, was going to join us today. The weather and some other things have prevented him from being with us, but he did email a couple of questions related to the medical school. What, if anything, was challenging about making sure that it would be ready for students this year, 2014?
Well, of course, the big hurdle, appropriately so, was satisfying the AAMC, the American Association of Medical Colleges, the Liaison Committee on Medical Education, to make sure that we had put together the appropriate curriculum, that we had the resources, that we had the stuff to do it and to do it well. And, of course, they gave us a pass on that and said, go forth. We need help, and we think you can do that and do that very, very well. So then the next question was obviously securing a facility. MPI helped us do that very nicely. I'm very pleased it's downtown. I think it brings a richness to the downtown. We have a marvelous community here, but it adds another significant anchor to downtown, and that's very good in terms of the vibrancy of the community. The opportunity for all the business community as well to provide services for the many people that this will bring to the downtown. So that's all very, very positive. The next thing, of course, is making sure that we remodeled and refurbished, renovated the MPI facility to make it state-of-the-art for a medical school. And I've had the opportunity to look at that recently. I'm very, very pleased. I think it's just going to be a phenomenal resource, not only for a great school of medicine, but also for the community as a whole. We envision groups will find that to be a very attractive place to hold meetings, to hold some other conferences, large groups and gatherings and meetings and those kinds of things. So all of that's very, very positive, as it should be.
And another question that Andy Fitzpatrick of the Battle Creek Inquirer had is that local healthcare professionals have said that one of the keys to fighting the national doctors shortages effect here is to find ways to get doctors to connect to Michigan. And does the med school fit into that, and how?
Yeah, in two directions. One is obviously when you bring talented people to a school of medicine like Western Michigan University, many of those will come from in-state, but not all. But they will quickly learn the beauty that we have in this region. This is a highly desirable place to live, to raise a family, to have a good life and a professional career. So we have that going for us. And then we have the graduate medical education, the residency program, where we bring people into Michigan via our hospitals, two excellent hospitals, Borges and Bronson. And so when you bring those residents in into a really nice environment where you have a medical school, other resources, it encourages them to stay and to find their way here and to stay here.
Is that part of perhaps putting a plug on the brain drain in Michigan is encouraging
so.
Them to
yeah.
take their residency here?
Yeah, you know, I like to remind our legislators, the governor and others, that, look, we're bringing a great gift to the state of Michigan. You know, we haven't asked for nor have we secured any kind of state funding. This is a really marvelous gift that we're providing to the state of Michigan, to its people and to our government and to all of us. And kudos to Western Michigan University. And I don't want to be patting oneself on the back there, but by golly, people ought to be, because we're doing it differently and we're going to do it well. And it's going to make a huge difference and a real game changer for our region, our community, and the state of Michigan. And I think nationally eventually.
Any plans to seek any sort of state funding down the line, or will this remain privately funded?
I think the day will come where the state will say, you know, you guys have done it so well, here's some money. But we're not going to ask for that.
Yvonne?
Switching gears just a minute, the announcement came out last week that the renovation of East Hall will focus only on the core and that the wings are going to be demolished this spring. Can you talk a little bit about the decision-making that went into that?
Yeah, I think the community as a whole helped us with that in coming to the conclusion. We made a good run at that in terms of trying to find additional resources to secure the wings. We were very open about that, very transparent. We communicated well, I think, to people that, look, there's only so much that we at the university can do to sustain East Campus and East Hall in particular. I think we did the right thing. We made a commitment to preserve the core of East Hall and to acknowledge that as our history and to preserve it well and to make it a really, really nice environment, and it will be. The plans for that are going to be very, very well received. We also had hoped at one time that maybe one of the wings or two of the wings could be preserved as well. We made that well known to the community. There simply isn't the interest or the appetite to help us provide the funding for such. And so, you know, at some point you move on, you do what you need to do, and that's where we are right now.
Why was this the deadline, you know, the end of 2013, why was that the deadline for determining whether or not you could raise that money?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Gordon. And, you know, at some point you just have to have a deadline. And at some point you say, look, we've given this everything we can. This isn't just the last few months. I mean, we've been after this for years. And there hasn't been any strong effort by others to acknowledge the importance of and to provide the necessary funding. It was always about the vision. We finally agreed with that. It is about the vision, and we have a vision for an alumni center that will be, I think, one of the must-go-to places on not only our campus, but also in the community as a whole.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Western Michigan University President John Dunn, and also here is Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Yvonne Zipp. Yvonne, next question for President Dunn.
I wanted to ask about the affiliation with Cooley Law School, that it sort of still had one more hurdle to go, and sort of what's the status of that?
Yeah, we're doing very, very well. We had both the Higher Learning Commission that we have very good rapport and relationship with. Cooley is a member of the Higher Learning Commission, as we are at Western Michigan University. And really, to Cooley's credit, there is no need for them to be a member of the Higher Learning Commission. There are many law schools that choose not to do that. They've always chosen to do it, and they honor and respect very much the accreditation requirements there as well. And in addition to that, the American Bar Association, and we'll be getting further word on that. I think in January, there's a meeting and materials that we've submitted in both Cooley and Western Michigan University. And then I think the final on that is in the month of March. So we're on go. I've communicated recently again with President Don LaDuke. We communicate frequently. Our teams are meeting, looking at curricular issues and relationships and how things will play out. So we're very, very excited about that. Again, I think that nationally, there's this large cry that higher education needs to think differently and to think out of the box, you know, all those trite phrases. But we're doing that. We are thinking out of the box, and we communicate that, I think, well to the Higher Learning Commission. Look, this should be something that people acclaim, because we're not trying to unnecessarily get into the issue of trying to create a law school. We're looking for a law school that is seeking a partner, a major research university. We're it. And we're very pleased about that, as are they.
I mentioned earlier that Andy Fitzpatrick from the Battle Creek Inquirer was not able to be here, had planned to be here, but he had another question related to health, and that's the tobacco ban, which goes into effect this year on campus. Why is now the right time for it? How will it be enforced on a large university campus? And did you look at other universities to see what was effective and what wasn't?
Yeah, better late than never. I think that one could argue that we should have done this earlier. We're certainly not the first. It's a little difficult to track this, but many have reported there's as many as 900 institutions out of the 4,000 plus that have taken similar action. How they enforce it and how they monitor it is varies from campus to campus. But our concern here is we're not saying to people that you cannot smoke. We're simply saying we're a smoke-free campus and that we want to be very careful about secondary incidents of smoke and the effect of on the health of everyone. And we did look at other institutions. We don't have any plans to create a smoke police force. We don't really have the need to create additional expenditures in doing those kinds of things, but we do expect that the community as a whole will help enforce and remind all of us that we have an expectation that people not smoke, and that we remind one another if we see someone who violates that without getting into fisticuffs and all those potentially ugly kinds of things. But we're a mature campus, and I think we'll handle this well. When I made this comment and shared this with the Western Student Association, the student body, the governing student body, it was a round of applause. I started to say I think they stood up and applauded, but I don't know. I can't recall directly whether they stood up or not. But there wasn't anyone that was surprised by it, nor was there strong levels of opposition. I think the campus is ready for it. We've studied it. I think we know what we're doing. We're providing ample time. We're also helping our employees who smoke by smoking cessation clinics and other ways that we can assist them monitor their smoking and be a little more careful and thoughtful about their own health.
An observation I would make as an employee here is that the current regulation of you have to be, I think it's 25 feet from the building, is routinely violated on a regular basis.
Yep.
Do you believe that a smoking ban is a little easier to kind of draw a bright line and say you just can't smoke here?
That's correct. And I think you've got it right. I think the 25-foot ban has been violated on many occasions. And I think this is the better way to go. We know the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, was the first in the state to do this. They've done well, but it'll take us some time to really orient people and to get the level of what I would call full compliance in place. But we'll get there.
Yvonne?
With the medical school and the law school and, with all these changes coming, is there anything in 2014 that you're looking at as this is number one on my list? This is something that I really want to see happen.
Well, of course, we want to make sure that we do a couple things with the medical school. One is we want to make sure that we get off to a great start, and we will. But we also want to make sure that we are looking at all of the opportunities associated with having a medical school as it relates to the rest of the university community. And by that, I'm thinking in terms of obvious issues related to philosophy and ethics and the talent that we have in departments on campus and how that might be more fully integrated into a really first-class medical school, including the arts. There's a lot of discussion today about the arts and the impact of that on overall health status, healing as such. We have a phenomenal College of Health and Human Services. We want to make sure that they're integrated as well, that we capitalize on our PA program, our nursing program, the therapies that are there, social work, and all of those kinds of things. Because there's a whole new model now on medical education. The new model is that the physician is obviously captain of the team. But the new physician, the physician of today, has got to acknowledge all of these other people and the talent that they have. And we need to make sure that they understand that talent, that they see it during their training, that they don't discover that outside of their medical education in practice. So we're really working hard to make sure that we do that and to do it well. But we've got work to do there. I would say the other thing is I'm keeping my eye on the overall question of enrollment. You know, we have a very significant decline in our high school populations in Michigan. It's going to be increasingly challenging for us to sustain enrollment, us as well as all of our sister institutions in the state. So it creates then opportunities for us to think in terms of our international community, the states that are around us, places that do not have the access points that they'd like to have. And we have places for people here. We're looking at our tuition rates, not only in-state, but equally important out-of-state, to the non-resident rate. Should we adjust that in some appropriate way that is a little more attractive to the non-resident? Right now, our factor is about a 2.8. So anyone who's non-resident pays almost three times as much for their education. Well, look, you know, the state is providing us with now we're at $97 million. Our overall expenditures are at over $500 million. The general operating fund, which is what most people look at, is at $340 million. Well, you know, the old days were, the state was the provider. That's not the case anymore. So we may need to look at that in a way that's a little more respectful of our non-residents, because we have so many people that know the talent that's available on our campus. I mean, we're talking East Coast, West Coast, and they want to come here, and we're the institution of choice. But we've got that barrier in terms of cost associated. So we're looking at that again to see if there's a different and a better way to do that.
I don't have it in front of me, but Bridge Magazine did a story this past year where they looked at, in 2013, where they looked at the out-of-state enrollment and also foreign enrollment. Mm-hmm. Found that, interestingly, I believe it was Northern Michigan University had been able to market itself pretty well out-of-state, bring in students from Illinois and Wisconsin, some of the neighboring states where they were also facing, large tuition increases at those state schools. Is that what you're thinking about here for Western, that you might be able to reach out some of the neighboring states where students are also, you know, maybe cost isn't quite as much of a factor to come out of state anymore?
Well, we have been doing that for many, many years. I think what I'm trying to communicate is that the efforts there have been successful, but we're going to increase those efforts. But to increase those efforts, I think one of the obstacles that we're dealing with is the non-resident tuition rate. So you can work as hard as you want, but in the bottom line, when families are looking at this, now, we also are a campus that's very easy for the non-resident to come here and to secure residency after 1 year if they do a number of things. But again, that initial sticker shock may be the obstacle, and we have to look at that very thoughtfully and carefully.
There's quite a calculus that would go on there, I would think, that you've got to figure how much can we drive up enrollment to justify bringing the sticker price down. You have to increase volume to make up what you're losing on each one. Is that how you look at it?
Yeah, you're right ahead of the curve on this. You get an A+ because that's exactly right. I mean, if you decrease your non-resident rate, tuition rate, then you have to assume that your volume is going to go up. And you can do the calculus on that quite quickly in terms of how many students would that require to make sure that you're balanced, you haven't hurt your overall budget, and then from there grow in terms of future years. And so there's a number of critical factors that have to be assessed there.
In the past, the University of Michigan has found itself locking horns with the legislature. This goes back probably at least a decade and a half over the percentage of out-of-state students that they were enrolling at the University of Michigan. Would you have any concerns about that? Or, as you mentioned earlier, with the drop in the percentage that the state provides to the university's general fund, is that as much of a factor anymore?
Well, I think the governor, Governor Snyder, has that right in that Governor Snyder has been very open of saying, you know, the international community and the international students, there's a rich, rich talent there, brain power. And if we do it right and we bring people here and they see what we have to offer in the state of Michigan, then the likelihood of them choosing to utilize their talents in supporting our Michigan economy it goes up significantly. I think we've always done it well here. I think my predecessors and not only the presidents, but the faculties, the faculty senate, and others who have been involved in the governance structure have done it well here, in that our balance has been very, very good. You know, if you look at our history over time, our non-resident to our resident ratio has been very favorable. Where we lost our way was in our international community. At one time, we had well over 2,000 students from various parts of the world here on our campus. In 2007, when I arrived, that was 967. Now we're at 1,700, almost 1,700. And we are really continuing to work on that because we know that the world is our market. We have programs that will help not only the state of Michigan, but the world as a whole. That's the quality of a great university. And so we want to continue to emphasize that. And by doing that, then we develop those partnerships with others in the world so that that also then leads to new connections and relationships with the state of Michigan. And I think the governor has that right. I mean, the governor has really is not fearful of talking about that. And he understands quite well what the international community also brings to the economy of the state of Michigan. So, you know, it is important, and we're not going to back away from that.
Western Michigan University President John Dunn, as always, thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much. Man, that went quick. Thank you very much. I enjoyed the conversation. It's nice to be with you.
And Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Yvonne Zipp, thank you as well for being here.
Thank you so much, Gordon.